back to We the People.
I changed my volume so much and I can't hear anything. There we go. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Yep. Look at this. We're like a well-oiled machine.
I know it. We're downright slippery in here.
Exactly. You can find all of the information about the program, sponsorship ideas, contact Bill or contact me with ideas, you know, ideas for shows, ideas for things we should be looking into, maybe guests. If you've heard a great interview, read a really good book, shoot that to us. We'd like to have it. You can contact us at wethepeopleradio.us. And now, without further ado, we're going to zoom right back to our guest, G. Edward Griffin, who you've probably heard of. And unless you've been living under a rock, I'm sure you read The Creature from Jekyll Island a long time ago. Or maybe recently, you never know. With all the stuff that's happened in the last 8 years, books like that have become much more on the forefront,
oh,
I think.
That book was so far ahead of its time.
It's, all of a sudden, it's popular again.
Yeah.
Edward, help me. A World Without Cancer?
Yeah, that's the 1974 book.
Perfect. I didn't have it in front of me, and they didn't want to read the title incorrectly. I need to read that one. I'm not familiar with that one. I'm familiar with writing about it that you have done, but not the book itself. Any others you'd like to plug while we're?
Well, those are the two kind of most popular ones right now, and. Since you said the word plug, that reminds me my staff is always telling me to plug our website. So
yes, please.
I always forget to do that. In addition to freedomforceinternational.org, which you mentioned before, which is my favorite site because it's where we don't have anything to sell except ideas, but we do have a commercial site. It's called realityzone.com. And there we've got books and recordings, videos and audio recordings. Got over 100 items that are dealing with topics like we're discussing today, and they're really hot topics. So if you want to, you know, see where our documentation comes from and our sources and all that, that's where you go to realityzone.com.
Cool. I will. I got to that through Freedom Force International, but I'll post that as a link as well.
Yeah, the Freedom Force International site's what I was on last night, and boy, it's got some good information there.
On any topic, pretty much. You throw a dart, you'll hit it. Very nicely done, too. And things you can print out, like the collectivism brochure. Don't argue with your friends or family, just print the brochure. It's four little sides, and you could be in and out of the argument before you know what hit them.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. Yeah, if we were collectivists, we would say no.
You must print the
brochure. We're going to strap you into the chair and pry open your eyelids until you agree with us.
Exactly. We will make you believe.
No, that's what the collectivists do, actually, and in one way or another. And, the perfect example is seatbelts. That always comes to mind. You know, we all agree that seatbelts are a good idea. The collectivist says seatbelts are good. If you don't wear seatbelts, you're apt to get killed or somebody will get killed. Therefore, let us pass a law. And if you don't wear seatbelts, you dummy, we're going to fine you or put you in prison. And the individualist says, yeah, I agree. Seatbelts are very important, and I wear them and so forth. But I believe that people should have the freedom to wear them or not. Now, if you want to browbeat your kids and say, oh, you put your seatbelt on, that's something else again. But in a free society with adults, you can use the power of example. You know, look, I put my seatbelt on. You can maybe chip in some money and produce a documentary film to go on television or be shown in the schools to convince people that they ought to wear seatbelts and all of that. But the individualist says, I believe in freedom of choice. And if you don't want to wear your seatbelts or a helmet or something,
helmet.
But, yeah, this is a free society. Well, there it is in a nutshell.
Yeah, and they never want to do that. They always want to make you have to do it. And I get into this conversation with a family member often regarding guns because at the end of the day, if you don't want to own a firearm, don't.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you do, why do you, the non-firearm owner, get to decide what I get to own? And the laws we make criminals don't follow. That's why we call them criminals. So we're always making these laws for criminals who aren't going to follow them further restrict the rights of the individual and the people who do use good sense and follow the law.
Yeah, well, of course, their argument is that guns are dangerous. You know, people get killed accidentally with guns. Guns are used by criminals.
You'd think that they were running around with legs.
Yeah, and my answer is, yeah, I agree. Guns are very dangerous. The only thing more dangerous than having guns is not having them.
Yeah.
That's it, you know. Yeah, I mean, at least that's my view. Now, if you don't agree with that, then don't have guns. That's fine. But, you know, the safest place in the world is a gun show. did you ever hear of anybody getting mugged or raped or murdered in a gun show? Yeah. I mean, everybody's got a gun in a gun show. No criminal would ever dream of doing anything wrong in a gun show.
Well, now, wait a minute. I did see a video on YouTube where security cameras picked up a guy, walked into a gun shop and tried to rob it.
I saw that, too.
Well, what happened to him?
Well, not only did the people behind the counter pull a gun on him, half the customers pulled their guns as well.
Yeah. Okay, that makes the point, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Oh well.
Oh my gosh. And so now your next if we're going to go in order on your creative freedom, number 4 is one that I got to tell you our end of the state just deals with nonstop. Property rights. Good Lord, these people in the city always want to curtail the rural people's property rights.
Yeah. Well, what they don't realize, and I didn't realize either when I was in school, because I sort of bought into the propaganda line that, you know, it's unfair that some people should have property and others do not. So to eliminate that unfairness, we shouldn't allow anybody to have property. We'll have it owned by the community or the group. We're back to that again, to the collective. We'll own all property, which means that it'll be owned by the administrators, the bureaucrats and the politicians.
The clerks.
That's what it really means. Look in Soviet Russia, for example, or communist China, especially under the days of the classical administration of collectivism there. Nobody owned anything, theoretically, but the rulers, you know, the Stalins and the Khrushchevs and so forth, they lived like kings. There was no king of history that ever lived any better than they. It was a definite ruling class there. It was more of a class structure under collectivism than there is under classic capitalism, you know. So if you think you're going to eliminate the injustice of between the haves and the have-nots by taking away their property, you're making a big mistake because you're just making it worse. People don't realize that. But beyond that, what they don't realize and what I didn't realize was that property rights are human rights. You know, I remember reading one collectivist essay and it said, we must not place property rights above human rights, I think is the phrase. And I thought, wait a minute, professor, let's go back over the property rights are human rights.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the highest form of human rights, because if you don't have the right to property, you don't have the right to be independent.
No.
You don't have any means of supporting yourself. It means you're completely dependent upon the collective. You're completely dependent on the state for food, shelter, clothing, everything. And that's where they want you. They want you right under the thumb so that the minute you step out of line, you know, they throw the switch and you can't eat, you can't live under a roof or anything. That's what it's all about. If you take away the human right of owning property, then you have set in motion a system where everybody is a servant of the state. And that's the short way of answering all of it.
Sure. And the way they've gotten around it is they just, okay, you can own the property. That's real nice. I like this one. This is kind of the sleight of hand collectivist approach. We're gonna entice you with money and we'll stop coming after you to regulate your property if you'll just put it in a conservation easement.
Yeah.
Well, if you just that put makes... it in a conservation easement, it'll be good for everyone, and we'll make it worth your while.
Yeah, we'll pay you.
But what happens is you lose total control, or they're going to regulate your groundwater, or they're going to regulate your surface water. What you can do with your property. Oh, you, Mr. Farmer, you planted wheat. So you created little depressions in the ground. Some rain sat there for more than 4 seconds. So you have destroyed vernal pools, so you can't.
Or created vernal pools.
Or created now, them,
now you
wrecked them.
Disturb them.
I mean, we hear this all the time.
Yeah.
And,
not only do they pay you with your own money, because it's all tax money.
It's all tax money, right. Yeah.
And then you've got these regulations, so you don't really own. If you can't control something, you don't own it.
Correct.
No.
And then when you die, it has to go to the state, because nobody will, you know, you can't afford to pay an inheritance tax on it and then pay all the other taxes and all the rules and regulations. So eventually, within a generation or two, it all winds up with the state anyway. It's a slow method of confiscating your land.
Sure, and look at the volume of land. I refuse to call it federal land. It's supposed to be public land, but land that is under the control of the Forest Service or BLM or whatever. And we have counties, I mean, that are 70-80%. I think Trinity County is like 80% public land. Well, that's real nice, but what's the first thing that happens? Gates, you know, well, now you can't use it. It's a wilderness area, so you can't drive a vehicle on the dirt road. You can't ride a bike through it. I don't know if you're seeing it where you live, but.
Oh, but I've seen it up there in the Pacific Northwest. I spent a lot of time in Oregon, and I noticed that the lands that were getting logged off, really bare logging right down to the dirt, causing erosion, a terrible, terrible stewardship of the land, was all federal land. The private logging companies didn't dare do that because it was their property.
Right.
And they didn't want to destroy it. But public land, who owns that? Oh, to heck with it. You know, just strip it down, make the most money out of it so the bureaucracy can throw bigger parties, you know.
Well, and
they want the money.
If you come and look at it now they cut nothing, so it all burns up. So we've stopped cutting it and there are a lot of rules now. I don't think they could ever do any of those things again, but... now even management by thinning isn't being done, so it just burns up all the time. So now even your public land isn't worth anything, so they've taken it from you. You have to pay for it, and it's just going to make your life hard, especially if you live near
once
it.
Once your eyes are open to this, it's easy to see this sort of process everywhere you look. You know, as long as you think, well, if it's government land, the government is here to help us, right?
Yeah.
You know, once you break out of that dream... Then you begin to ask questions, and you realize that, no, that they're here to plunder us, not to help us.
Well, I think they're starting to wake up from the dream. You know, in California, the largest land owner in the state of California is the state of California. And therefore, they have to raise our taxes constantly in order to pay for all the stuff they want to give away. And I think people are just about done with it, although Sacramento now wants to secede from the union, so...
You know,
Isn't that
awesome?
They lost
Goodbye.
The election, so now they're going to pick up all their toys and go home.
if Sacramento
incredible.
Would just do that and leave the rest of the state, I think it'd be a good
idea. Oh, I hope
idea.
They do. Yeah, I hope they do.
It'd be a great idea.
I know. We wouldn't have to ask them to split it. We'll just stay. You can come up. You can come
maybe
up
we
here.
Should kick them out. We should kick them out of the union. Let you know.
we're just tired of their buffoonery. Goodbye.
We could kick them out and then take them over.
All seriousness aside, let's...
Yeah, right. gosh. Well, you know,
this idea of who is the best steward of the land, those who own it or those who control it, it's clear. Go to any neighborhood. Let's forget the public lands now. Go to any neighborhood, and you drive down the street, and you see all these nicely trimmed houses with the lawns cut, and everything is green and watered, and it's all painted and nothing broken down. And all of a sudden you see one just completely junk. Tell me, who is the renter and who is the owner?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, what's the greatest fear of a homeowner? That the neighborhood converts to rentals, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't own a piece of property, you don't take care of it. And this applies to all of us somewhat. I mean, I'm sorry to say, if you rent a car, you're more apt to take risks with that car driving over a curb or over a ditch or something than you would with your own brand new car.
Yeah.
You know, it's human nature. That which you have personal identity with, ownership, we like to call it, you take care of it. You are the better steward of that land or that piece of property if you own it. Than if the state supposedly owns it. And if you're worried about stewardship of the land and prosperity and posterity also, I mean, what about your kids? What are they going to inherit, you know? They talk about big corporations ruining the land. Well, take a look at what big government does to the land. Take a look over there in China. Now, that's all community-owned, right? The biggest affront to the ecology, the strip mining and that sort of thing is all done by state-owned operations in China. And also, we saw that in the Soviet Union. I mean, the greatest destruction of the environment has always taken place under collectivism, not under private property at all.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, it's just human nature. If you think about it, okay, bingo, next topic, you know?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. So anyway, that is point number four, and that's the difference between collectivism and individualism, is that individualists believe that property rights are human rights, and collectivists believe that human rights are above property rights and nobody should have personal property rights.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible mistake.
Can you hit on communitarianism real quick? We have somebody who's...
Sorry, I forgot about them.
...who's wanting to discuss that.
Well, yeah. Communitarianism is just another one of those words. Peel off the label and what have you got? Collectivism.
Collectivism, yeah.
That's
yeah.
it. So that's another example. We got this huge list of words. They mean nothing. You have to look at the essence. How do you define communitarianism? And everything we're talking about applies to that word. It's just like, you know, liberalism or I don't know, progressivism. There's so many words that get thrown out at you and say, this is new. Well, no, it's not new. Strip off the label and look at these principles that we're talking about. And you find it's the same thing that's under fascism, Nazism, communism. Socialism.
And then don't forget, like you were saying on your website, there's all the neos now too.
Yeah, neo-Nazism, neoliberalism, or neoconservatism, or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing except to try and confuse you to think, oh, maybe this is really different. Maybe we worked out the kinks. Maybe it'll work after all, you know?
It's the same thing.
Same thing, yep.
It'll be better this time. We'll just call it something else. It'll just be better.
And, you know, the real issue here is that most people don't think beyond the personalities of the political figures.
True.
Like in our recent elections, we're talking about, you know, Trump versus Clinton. Well, what's all the conversation about? Not much of what we're talking about here. It's all about, I hate Trump, but I hate Hillary more. Or I hate Hillary, but I hate Trump more. People don't vote for anything. They vote against things lately because they have no
right.
creed of their own.
Right.
They don't know what they believe.
And you know, I think, I hope they don't figure it out, but... I think they finally realized that they can't run on a platform of not liking somebody else. They have to have their own ideas, and they have none, other than the same old stuff that they just keep harping on people about, and we're not buying it anymore.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, the old idea that I vote for the lesser of two evils, that's been going on forever. Nobody's, I shouldn't say nobody, but very few people are enthusiastic about what they're voting for. They're all focused on the evil of the other person, as, you know, as though the person really made a difference. The people are not important because if they're collectivists, which most of them are, if something should happen to them, there's a huge long line of collectivists standing behind them waiting to step into their shoes. So you just go from one collectivist to the other under all these different labels, and you think, we got it. It's going to be different this time. And maybe we'll get a change this time. The only thing you change is the name of the person, but the philosophy that they're operating on is collectivism. And that is why nothing changes from one election to the next, and from one administration to the next, from one party to the next. It's all collectivism underneath it.
Ew. And on that dire note, we need to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. We're chatting with G. Edward Griffin, in case you haven't figured that out. And we've been doing it for an hour and a half, so if you've missed it, go to the website and listen to the archive. I'll have it up by about 45 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my give a damn's busted.
Maybe you could get that song to play when you click on the Creed of Freedom there.
I was just thinking about that. Where do I get these recordings? You've got a great collection.
Yeah, we'll have to send you. Bob, yeah. Bob's over there feverishly searching through the archives of sound to come up with just the perfect thing.
Yeah, I want to get these recordings, and I'm going to tie people down and make them listen to it and learn how to not use coercion.
You know what? Let's make a law about it. Seriously.
We're going to make a new law,
and we're going to make everybody do it, or we're going to fine them.
I get a kick out of it. People will read some of my stuff where I preach all this, and they'll say, yeah, this ought to be required reading in schools.
You're like, sorry, you failed. Go back to the beginning and read it again. So let's see, you want to do number five?
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the clock, and we're only about halfway through this. Not even halfway, so I have to speed things up and do the shorter version.
All right, we'll stop interjecting. Go on.
No, it's not your interjecting.
It is.
It's my rambling that's doing it. I know. Anyway, these are my favorite topics, you know, because at the beginning of the show, we were talking, what's so hot about this thing, collectivism? But the thing that's so hot about it is that it's the underlying motivative force behind almost everything that we don't like in our world.
Yes.
It's because people who are collectivists are running the show. And they're not doing the things we don't like. They're not doing that because they're bad people, but because they believe in the principles of collectivism, and they really think that by doing all of these things, they're making a better world for the greater number. So if we don't understand that, then we'll never be able to change anything, because we'll always be saying, well, that's a bad person. Let's just get a new name on the ballot. Let's get a new person into that position, and everything will be fine. Not so. If we don't understand what motivates these people, if we don't understand what they think, we're just going to replace one with another every time, and that's the way it's going to be forevermore. So if we are serious about bringing about real change, we have to understand the differences between individualism and collectivism. And that's where the war is. We have to win it at that level. So, yeah, that's why it's so exciting, because it touches on everything on which we have an emotional response, everything that bugs us, everything that's worrying us, everything that is injuring us. Eventually comes back to this issue of collectivism versus individualism. Well, okay, number five. The heading is Money Without Coercion. Well, that pretty well says it when you think about how does collectivism pay for itself? It certainly doesn't do it through donations from the people who are being collectivized. Nobody sends in their money voluntarily and says, here's my donation. I like what you guys are doing. I like, you know, it takes... take more control of my life. This is all I can afford this week, but next week I'll increase my donation. No. Mm-hmm. No. The money has to be extracted from the people against their will.
Sure. OPM.
Yeah, other people's money. And collectivism cannot be based on honest money. When I say honest money, I mean money that is created out of gold or silver because it has intrinsic value, because then people would have to send it in. The only way collectivism can work is if the collectivists themselves create the money out of nothing. It can't wait around for people to send it in, like gold or silver or something. The collectivists have to be able to create it themselves. And that is, of course, now we're talking about the Federal Reserve System, which, you know, happens to be one of my real hot-button topics, because the Federal Reserve and all of the central banks around the world do pretty much the same thing. They create money out of nothing and convert it into paper currency and coins and mostly digital impulses in a computer and ink spots on a piece of paper. There's nothing behind it anywhere, gold or silver. It doesn't take any human effort to produce it, maybe a very little bit of printing a piece of paper with ink on it. But, you know, they can print a $1,000 bill for 1,000 of those for a penny or something like that. So it is a really, literally easy to create money out of nothing if you have the laws that allow that. So how do you solve that problem? Well, being an individualist, I cannot say that we should really pass a law that forbids that. If banks want to issue script and people want to use the script as money, I think that's probably a risky thing to do unless the bank has proven itself to be very trustworthy. But if they want to do that, as an individualist, I like to give them freedom of choice to make mistakes. And if enough people make mistakes, then you don't have to pass the law. It'll be common knowledge that this is not what you do, you know?
Yeah, bad idea.
That's how the free society works. So I'm not going to advocate a law that prohibits the very thing that I think is so bad. But what I do believe in is freedom of choice, which means I would like to give anybody the freedom to create their own money if they wish. You think, oh, that's an outrageous thought. Money has to be issued by the government, right? Wrong. In fact, the earliest money has always been issued by individuals. The dollar, for example, comes from the word thaler. It's a Dutch word. Means I think the guy's name was Schlockenthaler or something. It was some Dutchman that actually created coins, silver coins. And it was called the thaler after the man that created it. It was a very high-quality coin, could be relied upon for its content, and it became the dollar. The world, you know, works on the name coming from a private individual who created money. Money can be created by private individuals or institutions, corporations, anything, as long as it is accepted voluntarily by the people because it is known to be reliable. I don't care who creates it. You know, you can use Disneyland coupons, if you wish, as a money supply. If the people want to do it, that's why I think freedom of choice is the issue here. In a free society, anybody should be free to use anything they wish as a medium of exchange and not be required by law to use this and this only. It's when you are forced by law to use a particular form of exchange as money, that is when that money is apt to go bad, because then the people who are in charge of issuing it know that the people have to accept it regardless of what they do, so they start playing games with it, and the first thing you know, you have a corrupted money system or one that has no backing entirely, like what we have now. So, back to point number five, money without coercion simply means that the people should be free to choose any form of money they wish, whether it is a government-issued currency, whether it is a government-issued currency from another nation, whether it is privately issued currency, whether it is barter, whatever it is, they're free, sovereign citizens. They should be free to choose what they want. Under those circumstances, then, the forces of supply and demand and competition over a period of time, and I don't think it would be much more than about 5 or 10 years, over a short period of time, the people would decide through freedom of choice which is the best money to choose. And that, maybe two of them, side by side, will circulate as money. And from that point forward, it will be impossible to plunder the people by debauching the currency. It's a very important principle, and I think people need to really get up to speed on that one, because as long as we fund collectivism by allowing the collectivists to create money out of nothing, I don't think we're ever going to change anything.
True. True. And where do you see that going with this new batch of folks?
I don't see it going. It doesn't have much speed under it right now. Ron Paul was very clever, not clever, brilliant, when he introduced this idea several years ago. He introduced a law. Of course, it didn't get very far because nobody in Congress or the Senate wants this. But he introduced the proposal that people should be free to choose any currency they wish. And it was mostly a statement of principle and, you know, calling attention to this concept. It did get some attention, but not what it deserved. I'd like to see Freedom Force make this a major issue in the future.
Let us know when you do, and we'll just blab about it for 2 hours.
Well, I just did. Let's blab. This is here. Let it be known that right here on this date at this time, this movement has been launched.
And you didn't
let it be proclaimed.
You didn't need to get a consensus to do that.
No consensus. We agree, so let's do it.
Let's make everybody read about it, huh?
Yeah.
let's force required reading.
Yeah.
This equality under the law? Because you know what? I think we're watching that hijacked in a big way. at least over the last few years.
Equality under law. Everybody says, yeah, I believe in equality under law.
As long as some people are more equal than others.
They turn around and they vote and support every law you can think of that is terribly unequal in that it applies differently to different segments of society. I mean, just take the income tax, for example. Well, does everybody pay the same tax? Of course not. There are exemptions and deductions all over the place. The law, the IRS, the income tax law, as I understand it, with its rules and regulations, is thousands and thousands of pages long. Nobody has ever read them all. And every page, every word in those documents is designed to make the application of the law unequal in some way. It's to give someone an advantage over everybody else. And so they're just an example. I mean, we have people that say, well, we should give certain groups an advantage. We should subsidize them because they are poor or because they're old or because they have a particular gender or because they have a background of exploitation. Historically, their people were exploited or whatever. I mean, there are thousands. This person is handicapped or this person is needs an education or this person has a certain disease. The laws are endless. They're all 95% of our laws are designed to apply the rules unequally, and everybody thinks it's a good idea to try and rectify some injustice as they see it. And then they turn around and they say, yeah, I believe in equality under the law. Well, no, they don't. I think they should. And so I think that we would get rid of most of the fraud and plunder and the corruption if we would just insist that all laws do, in fact, apply equally to every person, and regardless of the merit of their case or the strength of their argument or all of that, just equality under law. Then there's no temptation to go into politics to make a profit, because you can't use the law to shift the wealth from one group to another. And if you can't do that, then nobody's going to come to your office and offer you bribes. So, you know, it takes care of a lot of problems if we just insist on equality under the law.
Yeah, good idea. I get so frustrated. They talk about equality, but then they want to make special rules for the people they consider special. And for whatever reason, people buy that. You know, I think they're getting a little tired, though, of being browbeaten. You know, every time you disagree, you're a racist or a hater or whatever.
Let's be clear. A lot of people, you know, they do have problems, and you do want to help them. But that's where charity comes in. Help these people, yes. But let's not use the coercion of law to do it, because that's where all the mischief shows up.
Well, sure. Anytime you mandate that sort of thing, it just makes it worse.
Well,
it
look
does.
At, you know, the hiring, all the hiring practices. You had to have, you know, so many white people, so many brown people, you know, you had to have all that. It's kind of like how many tall people, how many short people, you know, are they the best ones for the job? Oh,
yeah,
well, we forgot about that.
Fat and skinny, blue eyes, brown eyes. Yeah, of course. And no, this is, they call it discrimination. Well, okay. What more can I say?
Yeah, it's just a backwards version of discrimination.
You have to take the politics out of it. It's the politicization of charity that leads to all of the trouble. If you get the politics out of it, people will solve these problems through freedom of choice and just human instinct to do what is the right thing. Now, not all people will do it, of course. Some will take advantage of it. But more will take advantage of the political system, because there they can do all of the same evil things but make it look like they're good people because they're advocating, helping certain groups, when actually they're just dipping into the money stream for themselves.
Exactly. And a lot of that is solved by the great leader, which is your next part. But let's take a quick commercial break. It'll be our last one, and then we can hit these last two, because the great leader and the proper role of the state are super important and things we should be looking at more, I guess, more critically. We're chatting with G. Edward Griffin. We were discussing, the Creed of Freedom on his website.
It's a hard world to get a break in. All the
Bob said he would make you a list of the songs, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
And this is one you might want to put in your Creed of Freedom. You should probably make a little, you know, like have a little button there. Are you offended? And then they push it, and it pops up, and it gives this great message. If I offend you, cry me a river. I'll bring snacks in a raft. I will literally float down your tears, eating chips and working on my tan.
Well, that offended me.
It just takes Cry Me a River to just a, yeah, just a better place.
Yeah.
Snacks in a raft. Whoever wrote that should get a prize.
You know, sometimes the greatest lessons of your life come as a result of someone offending you and jarring you and making you think, you know. You don't learn really big lessons easily. It takes something to redirect your life. And, you know, I've had people say things to me that were terribly, I guess the word is offensive. They shocked me. I didn't like them. I rebelled against them. And I got to thinking later, you know, I must have done something wrong. What did I do wrong to create this? And I think about it and think about it. Finally, oh, that's what I did wrong. Well, hey, thanks for offending me. Now I know what not to do. Nothing wrong with
it. Or when you know you're right and they get offended, you're like, oh, I'm in the ballpark now.
Yeah.
It's a good indicator of the target, how close you are to the target.
Yeah.
So you have a really nice piece here on the great leader. And without individualism, you're never going to find a great leader, because collectivism, although it does have a leader, it's not usually the great one.
Yeah, leader has a different meaning. And, you know, I was just looking at the time remaining. I think to speed this up, I'm going to do what I don't like to do, and that is actually read things.
Talk really fast.
Yeah, I think this will get us to the point a lot faster. So this isn't too long. It's point 7 in the Creed of Freedom. It's the great leader, and here's how it goes. I believe that leadership is a natural outgrowth of human dynamics and is essential for social order and large-scale tasks. However, there are two types of leadership. One is based on coercion and decree. That's found in military organizations and totalitarian political systems. The other is based on persuasion and good example, found in voluntary organizations and free political systems. We must evaluate leaders not only on their stated goals, but on which type of leadership they offer. Their goals may be admirable, but how they pursue those goals may be tyranny. All modern totalitarian systems have a great leader who claims to represent the best interests of the people, but who is in reality merely a dictator. Truly great political leaders do not follow that path. Okay, that's it in a nutshell, and it's something to keep in mind even when we like a leader because he or she seems to be opposing someone we really hate. You know, we got to think not just, is this the lesser of two evils? Not only because, well, is there something good about this? Let's look and see if we can find something good. But what kind of leadership is this person offering? If they're saying, I will do this and I will do that, that's a very troublesome thing. If I were running for president, God help us, I would probably say, look, I'm not going to do anything because I don't have the power under the Constitution to do anything. I'm just the executive. But what I will do is try and arouse public opinion and have the people demand that their congressmen and senators do this, this, and this. I'm just the president. I'm not a king. I'm not an emperor. I don't have the power to do anything unless I'm told by the Congress. And if you doubt that, read the Constitution, folks, you know?
Right.
So I get worried when I hear people say, I will do this and I will do that. I'm thinking, uh-oh, what kind of leadership is that?
Yeah, spooky leadership. The good news is the spooky leader we've had for 8 years, you know, who's been creeping around doing all sorts of things, has done so much of it by executive order. Oops.
Yep. Well, and that's, I will do this. Exactly.
And now can be undone with a different pen and a phone. So that's kind of fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, we're in the ivory tower now, right? And so we can take this high position when you're in the trenches. And the bullets are whizzing over your head. You can't always act on pure principle. I have to admit that. I know that's what people will say. And I agree with that. But anyway, we're talking about what is the ideal. What should we be working sure. toward? What do we believe in? So this is our goal. All right. Not much really to say beyond that. And so let's move to number eight. And this is probably the second most important one of the whole bunch. And that is the proper role of the state. And the reason I say it's so important is because, like any set of rules and philosophical statements, you can always find gray areas. It's clear on maybe 97% of issues, but what about this? And what about this? Oh, this is a tough one, you know, because the rules, it's not clear cut. So you have to have an overriding philosophy that guides you in the gray areas. And this is it. We have to have a view of what is the purpose of the state. I used to call it the government. I used to say, what's the proper function of government? And then I realized that that was a stupid thing to say, because by using the word government, I have salted the answer. What is the purpose of government? Well, it's to govern. Well, wait a minute. That's not what I want. Most people don't want to be governed. What do they want the state to do? Govern them? Not really. At least individualists don't. We want the state to protect us. That's what the original the founding fathers created, the original document of the Constitution, not to govern us, but to protect us. Actually, what the United States was, it was not a government, but a protectorate. Didn't use that word. I wish they had. But if you analyze the purpose of the Constitution, it was not to govern the people, but to protect their lives, liberty, and property. And that was pretty well spelled out in the the Declaration of Independence. To protect the lives, liberty, and property of the citizens was the purpose of this new state they were creating. So I changed it from government to state. So the proper role of the state, what is it? Well, it's not to govern us. It's to protect us. And there you have the essence of it. It's to protect the lives, liberty, and property of its citizens, nothing more. In other words, it's defensive in nature. It's not creative. It's not the great leader. We're not going to take care of them and teach them and provide education and housing and jobs and charity and pay their rents and fix their plumbing or anything like that. It's just to protect them. Now, why? It's because the state derives its power from the people, in at least the ideal system. We don't advocate that the state be based on conquest. Somebody comes in with a greater army and overcomes our state, and now we are subject to a new conqueror. No, we believe that the state should derive its just powers from the governed, or from the, not, there's that word again, from the citizens. And so what do citizens have the right to use force for? We have a right to use coercive force, even to kill, for certain things. What are they? Well, to defend our lives. Nobody would complain, or very few would complain, that we killed somebody because they were trying to kill us. You know? So we have a right to use coercion in defense of our life. What about our liberty? If somebody was trying to enslave us, we have a right to fight to the death to preserve our freedom. So, okay, the right to defend our life, our liberty, and what about our property? Well, most people have that instinct. You know, you've created something, you've worked all your life for it, and you've got something. It's your land or whatever it is, maybe something you built, and somebody tries to steal it from you, you have a right to defend your property. So there you have it. We have the ethical right to use coercion against our neighbors only in the defense of life, liberty, and property. If that's all we can use coercion for, then that's all we can delegate to our elected representatives. We cannot tell our neighbor that he has to close his shop on Sunday. We cannot tell our neighbor what he has to teach his children.
Yeah, but he didn't build that business.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, somebody had to include that.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Maybe he did, maybe. But so anyway, since we can't force our neighbors to close his shop on Sunday or to teach his kids a certain thing, we cannot delegate that power to a politician who then goes and passes a law and say, well, I represent the people, and therefore we now pass a law. All shops have to be closed on Sunday, and all kids have to go to public schools and learn this particular curriculum. So there's the essence, that the proper role of the state is to do only those things by coercion which people themselves can do. and that means only to protect the lives, liberty, and property of its citizens. So with that rule firmly in mind, we come to the gray areas. And if we're not sure about this, so we should always err in the favor of less control. We should always err in favor of going back to using coercion only in the defense of life, liberty, or property, and use that as our final litmus paper test. So that's what the proper...
Because less is more.
Less is more, yeah.
Thank you so much. Look at that. We killed 2 hours handily.
We are definitely going to have you back on. We've got so much to talk about.
We could pick your brain for days and days and days.
Well, I don't know. After we get past a couple of points like this, it gets pretty barren. But
I don't think so.
Not thinking so. Bill didn't even get as much time on his peace symbol as he wanted.
Well, I'd love to do it. So thanks a lot for all you're doing, and I hope we've...
Well, thank you very much for being on with us. It's been a real pleasure.
All right, thank you.
So enjoyable, and we'll shoot you the list of all the songs because they were awesome. That is our guest, G. Edward Griffin. We are done for today. We will see you next week. Do not miss it. It is geoengineering and fear porn. So if that doesn't get you to tune in, I don't know what will. You're listening to We the People.
You just like saying porn.
I do.